This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Legacies shape who we are, but who's shaping them? In the new season of Black History Year, we're breaking down the meaning and power behind the personal, familial, and systemic legacies that define our world. We're diving deep into how political and cultural forces have historically molded Black communities and what it means for our future. Join us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts for a new season of Black History Year. Let's shape our collective memory and legacy together.
Wrapping up this edition of Take Command, Craig Hoffman here, Logan Paulson there, and we're going to talk more about the line of scrimmage, but this time on the defensive side of it. We got a John Allen, Daron Payne question in a few, Logan, but starting off with Johnny Newton and Brian, who we just heard from on the offensive line side, also had a part two, and since both of his questions are good, we're going to take them. I'm not panicking or anything, but even as Johnny Newton likely will benefit from a healthy offseason, he is a bit small. Would he maybe make a better edge player than an interior player? With his quickness and relentlessness, it seems like he'd be pretty dangerous there, even if he might not be the speediest at running the hoop, or is that dumb? I would just start with this on a blanket level. If you want someone to switch positions at the professional level, your idea probably is not baked all the way through. And I don't know why we get a million of these. And I'm saying this, I'm trying to say this both nicely and because Brian had the self-awareness to be like, is this dumb? Sliding over one position on the defensive line for a guy who's got a ton of quickness, et cetera, like, we'll talk about it. This is not the worst one that I've gotten. But, like, you see, you know, Luke McCaffrey should switch to running back. I'm like, why? Because his last name's McCaffrey? You know, this guy should switch from corner to safety. This guy should switch from safety to corner. And it's like, if they have made it all the way to the professionals, chances are they're probably in their best position. Some guys can move. It's not totally impossible, depending on what the move is. But generally speaking, should this guy switch positions? The answer is no. I tend to think that for Johnny Newton, the answer is going to be no, in part because of that size. If you think of the best edge players, they are big, long, athletic types. Like, you want to talk about some basketball players like, yeah, Myles Garrett, you know, is the best edge. Micah Parsons, like, those guys could go play basketball. And in fact, both those two in particular have played in the NBA celebrity game and shown themselves decently well, dunking on people, etc. So from a length standpoint, that what you need to manipulate the space out on the edge, I do not think that is where Johnny Newton is going to be best, because he's a shorter, stockier guy. That quickness that he has, the explosiveness that he has, is probably more useful on the interior. Logan, your thoughts more than welcome here on Newton and kind of where he stands and his best usage moving forward.
Yeah, I kind of see it the same way. And again, like, so I think this is an interesting conversation about switching positions just in general. Like, obviously, you know, taking Luke McCaffrey and putting him at a running back, like, everyone says, oh, he just handled the ball and everything's great. But there's a protection element, there's a physicality element. And like, I think about Niles Paul switching from receiver to tight end. And I've worked with a lot of tight receivers who are switching to tight end in another business that I work on, right? And one of the things is like, yeah, like, you're a great athlete, you can run routes, but there's a physical component to this position that in your last position you were lacking, right? You just weren't able to accommodate. And so I will say the one thing about Johnny moving from defensive tackle to potentially defensive end or like an edge position is that the physicality is approximately the same. So like, one of the hardest things in terms of the transition, he's already kind of got that in the bag. Now, I think the thing that you alluded to is like the thing that makes it problematic, right? Is that like there's a reason he's playing defensive tackle, right? He's got 32 3/8 inch arms, which is not what you want to see from an elite edge, right? He's not, he's got a good get off, but not a great get off. Like there's a different type of get off from a defensive tackle to a defensive end. So on first and second down, do I think it's reasonable that he plays like the big end? I think that's entirely reasonable, right? Because he's going to be head up over a tight end. He's going to work his get off. He's going to work hands. He's going to violently shed. And I think that would be totally fine for him.
Right. If they want that package where Deron played edge, turn into Johnny at some point in the next couple of years, he could do that just fine.
I think that's totally fine, right? But again, like in terms of rushing the passer from that position, I think people sleep on the amount of stride length required to really affect an elite tackle, right? Like you just have to cover ground in a different way. So like I've coached defensive tackles as a pass rusher. I've coached defensive ends. I'll tell you, it feels different coming off the line of scrimmage, right? Their ability to kind of be explosive off those first two steps and really threaten and challenge that outside shoulder of the tackle, it's a different ball of wax. Now, is it good to throw different body types at tackles? Yeah, because I think there's a reason that, you know, sometimes you put a defensive tackle out there, they're not used to kind of dealing with that power and that strength. So do I think there's situational opportunities for that? But in terms of long-term, what's best for Johnny Newton, I don't think this would be best for him, right? And I do think that, like, one of the things about Johnny is that he was banged up all offseason, banged up for a big chunk of the season, coming into the season with the foot, right? So he didn't really have an opportunity to, like, develop. I do think when you look at the league, right, there, if you have elite quickness, you can be devastating on the interior. You can absolutely be devastating. And so if he can kind of figure out some tells, understand situationally, like, when he can be super aggressive, again, that's part of it, right? I think the athlete is fine. I think the measurables for defensive tackle are fine. I think the size is even fine, but you got to know when you got to gamble a little bit, right? When you're a quick, explosive defensive tackle, like the bigger guys, yeah, they don't need to gamble as much. They're big. They can use their hands, throw people down. Like Chris Jones, like he's gambling a little bit, but he's long, he's strong. He can do everything you need him to do. Johnny's got to be a little bit more aggressive gambling, kind of taking his opportunities. And I think as you play more professional football, you can do that, right? So like I get used to the snap count. I get used to the checks. I get used to the calls of the offensive line. Like when you're at the line of scrimmage, sometimes you can hear it on the TV copy if you listen closely. They'll be like, hey, doom, 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 doom. That's a duo. That's a call that every team uses for duo or a gap scheme run, right? So if I'm Johnny and I'm playing three technique and they're calling doom, I know that I can split this double team right now. I can widen. And you see Payne do it sometimes. He'll hear the call. He'll widen out. He'll split the gap. I think that's something that'll just make him more effective. Is he ever going to be a great run-stopping player? Probably not. Like, that's just not in his DNA. But can he be disruptive? Absolutely. And I think that's going to get better as he plays more NFL football.
And if you think of how this defense is kind of designed, I mean, look, would they love to be stout against the run? Yes. But they made choices in terms of personnel and style of play that I think a disruptor is more of what they right. want. Like, they're willing to give up the 6-7 yards, even the 12-yard run. And then on the very next play, you try to run it again, and now you're in 2nd and 14 because Johnny Newton, after getting pushed out of the way on the first run, splits a double team and makes a TFL on the second one. Right. Like, that's how they're designed to get stops. Can we get in bad down and distance for an offense and then make a play because we can now dial up our blitz package, or we can, you know, jump routes, or we can do whatever we need to do to generate the turnovers, or, you know, create the variance in the game that we want. And so I think that's a choice. I do think that finding the right pairing sure. for someone like Johnny is really important. And I think that's something that Dan ultimately never did in Dallas. And obviously that Green Bay game is going to live in Cowboys infamy forever in the playoffs. And obviously the way the Eagles ran on Washington in the NFC Championship game is something that will live in Washington infamy forever, added to the many games of infamy that Saquon Barkley created in 2024. But at the end of the day, like, Jerzon's, I think the biggest thing here that Brian mentions is, I know he has a healthy offseason, and that should matter. Like, we shouldn't blow past that. This is a guy that missed the entire offseason and then missed the entirety of training camp for his second surgery. So his ability to just be healthy going into an offseason will completely change, or should, I should say, completely change who he is as a player in 2025, because he will have a year of experience. He'll be able to go through the offseason program. He'll be able to go through the offseason weight program. And participate in OTAs and the whole thing. So I just think it's a totally different season for Johnny Newton. And that's exciting in a lot of ways.
No, that's, I kind of see it the same way. And again, like with, you know, we were talking about Jaden Daniels having a sophomore slump. Like, I think a lot of people overestimate, again, because of what Jaden Daniels did. And when you see a good rookie, like, think about, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. or Roma Dunze, these guys that were generational, infallible project, like, prospects, and they struggled this year, right? Yeah. I think that there's a steep learning curve. All the stuff you get away with, and I'll tell you firsthand, like, it's steep. Like, all the stuff you get away with in college, oh, I'm a little late in the snap count. Oh, I'm a little loose in my hands. Like, no chance, bro. Like, you got to tighten that stuff up. And so that's what we talked about at the top with Jaden. Is like, as long as you keep sharpening the sword, you can become a dangerous player in the NFL, right? And I think, like, hopefully Johnny will take this time where he's healthy. He's not prepping for the combine. He's not dealing with a broken foot this whole offseason, right? And get it right. And I think, like, that's ultimately what you're banking on. Is he, when you watch him on film, he is a commander. Like, when you watch his college film from Iowa, right? Illinois. He's physical. He's aggressive. He runs to the football and he finishes every play. And so if that gives you a really solid floor to a player, and now you just got to figure out, like, that technical, what do I need to do? Go from being a good college player to a solid NFL player, and hand placement, get off, understanding situation, all of those things kind of roll into one. And I also think about this, man, like, he did not have time to own the defense. Like, he just didn't. No. Defensive tackles, like, relatively straightforward, but, like, there's shading to this that is lost when you lose training camp reps. And I think that's also important.
Well, and he also went from missing training camp reps to starting because John got hurt. Right. Like, the ramp was like, hey, guess what? We just steepened your ramp by about 60 degrees here, but you went from, like, a nice easy hint to we're going straight up. Yeah. Real quick. As you were talking there, a story that you've told before on the pod, probably early days. So we have thousands upon thousands of new listeners at this point. Hey, everybody. There's a story you told about you and Cooley watching film and you getting like the snap count and your reaction time to illustrate, like, those nuances and how much that little stuff matters. Can you retell that story real quick?
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite stories, and it's one that I share with all of my clients basically. And so one of the things that, you know, like, when I'm in the league, right, I was talking to Cooley and he's like, man, you're not getting off on the ball. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's, you know, white 80, white, he said, hut. I go when he says, said hut. And he goes, like, come here, check this out. And so we go into the film room and he goes, play, pause, play, pause, play, pause. And the whole offensive line is leaving. And I'm still in my stance. I was like, that's crazy. He's like, go talk to Rybak, who was the center at the time. Go talk to Will Montgomery. Find out when they're actually snapping it. So they go talk to Rybak. And Rybak actually was snapping it on the S of set. So, like, white 80, set. And I was going on hut. So I was, like, a full beat behind everybody else in the run game. And so that was something that, like, I thought about. And I was like, that's something that I have control over. I can own. But that I had gone through all of the offseason, and we were in training camp at that point, and no one had said anything to me about it because it was such a subtle thing. And to Cooley's credit, like, he was so locked in and he could see it. So he was like, dude, why are you so late off the ball? And no one would say anything. No one, like, it didn't come up. But those are the types of details and the type of margin for error that you're negotiating there at the NFL level. Like, it's something in college I never even thought twice about. It never came up. I could be laid off the ball. I could still cut a guy out. I could be laid off the ball and still get a man reach. But when those dudes are better and they've got that step, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. And so, again, that's a subtle thing. That's, like, you know, tenths of, not even hundredths of a second. But that hundredths of a second, I will say, probably saved my career that year because it allowed me to be an effective player and understand, again, it was illuminating because it showed me the margin for error. There's no slack in the rope in the NFL game, right? Everybody's locked in. Linebackers know what you're doing. Like, watching London Fletcher, when you get to the line of scrimmage versus London Fletcher in practice and he's going, hey, it's run to the left, you better believe you're not laid off the ball because he's normally right, right? Luke Kuechly, him calling plays out at the line of scrimmage, like, I got to be on my horse on this double team to make sure that I can get to where I got to go. And if I'm a fraction of a second late, I'm in trouble. And so I think that's kind of what you're seeing here with Johnny. He lost all of that developmental time to kind of take the slack out of his game. And I think, again, he's a guy that I'm betting on because of how he works and how he preps. And just watching him in college, like, even the condition, like, this is not a strength conditioning podcast. But
we might have one next week.
Yeah.
Hey.
But the thing that gets me is, like, think about the conditioning level. Like, his conditioning level, he was not there. Like, the whole reason you have this offseason is to make sure that you're ready for the regular season. You lost all of it. Like, even, like, running and lifting. Like, you're not where you need to be. And so I'm very confident he'll figure it out and be able to play inside.
For sure. And by the way, that wasn't just a reference to the fact that we have 2 years in a row done our crossover edition of my training podcast and this podcast that at the Indianapolis Scouting Combine. And we are hoping to do that next Thursday. So be on the lookout for that. All right. Last question of the pod, Logan, goes to Jay from Bel Air. Jay says, the consensus seems to be to cut John Allen and keep Daron Payne. What's your thoughts on extending or reworking Allen's contract and trading Payne? Payne had a great season when he was up for a new contract, but he has not played up to that season since. I don't see him with the team beyond his current contract. Okay, so a couple of housekeeping things real quick before we get into whatever else we want to say on this from an analysis standpoint. Daron has 2 years left on his deal, his age 28 and 29 seasons. This year, he has a base salary of $19.5 million. Yeah. $19,560,000, if they want to say it the long way. Prorated signing bonus money. So this is money that the Commanders will have on the cap no matter what, $5.6 million. He's also got a workout bonus in there. You know, he's got $9 million in guaranteed money. So no matter what this year, because that $9 million is guaranteed and he's got 5.6 in the prorated signing bonus, they would have 16.8 in dead money if they traded him. So if they trade him,
oh, wow,
they would save 9.3 if they trade him, because wow, the difference in the guaranteed money versus the rest of the base salary. But they still, if they trade him pre-June 1, they have a 16.8 dead cap number. Now, if they can do this trade this summer somehow, where they do a post-June 1 trade, then it becomes very worth it. They have 5.6 in dead money, which they will have no matter what the next 3 years, because they've got the prorated signing bonus. And then they save $20.5 million. So trading Daron is not out of the equation. 16.8 is a lot of dead cap money. But I think that is worth pointing out before we even talk about what we think of John and Daron as players. Meanwhile, John, if you were to just straight up cut him pre-June 1 this year, you have $6 million in dead cap money from his prorated signing bonus, and you have $16.4 million in cap savings. So you can create about $16 million of space by cutting him. Doesn't matter pre or post June 1st, because this is the actual last year of his deal. There's not even any void years after it. And yeah, that's kind of the John Allen story from a contractual standpoint.
Yeah. This is a tough conversation to have, because it's guys that have committed a lot and done a lot for the organization. I will say about the question, you know, like, Daron Payne has produced at the exact same level throughout his career. And so what I would say to that is, people are like, oh, he had 13 sacks 1 year. His pressure rate is like 9.1, almost on the dot.
I think, can I rephrase that for you?
Yeah,
though? Can I say he's played at the exact same level? He has not produced at the same level, because the 1 year that play level turned into a lot higher rate of production because he finished a ton of sacks.
Yeah, so he's been the same guy. So like, when I hear fans get frustrated, it's because like, he's not getting 13 sacks. I understand the frustration, but it's also like, this is who he is. He's a good athlete, good physicality, good on first and second down, has some decent pass rush juice, not that top tier, S tier pass rusher, but he's a good defensive tackle. Now, I think the question becomes is like, is it worth what you're paying him? And I think the way the tackle market's going, it's actually like kind of becoming like a kind of, not a middle of the road deal, but kind of upper middle class kind of deal for defensive tackle, because everyone's getting paid a lot of money. So I don't know. I think you probably, we'll see. I would defer to Adam on all this stuff, obviously.
Of course.
But the, so if I'm talking about Daron specifically, I would talk to the coaches and be like, hey, like, where do you see him? Like, what's his role? Like, how do you feel about him as a player? I'm sure that they like him. I'm sure that he, because again, when you watch the film, like, does he have ups and downs? Yes, every player does. But does he still have flashes? Can he still set a double team at times? Yes. Can he be disruptive? Yes, 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 yes. All those things. I think the number associated with him has a lot of fans expecting something different, but like, this is who he is. And he's been pretty consistent with it his entire career, right? John is a different story to me. Like that becomes a little bit different because there's no tie to it, really, right? They didn't draft him. They didn't bring him in. It's a big cap hit if they do keep him for the season. So that becomes a little bit more interesting. A restructure, like let's say John is willing to come back at like, I don't know, $8 million a year on a restructure, $9 million a year, $10 million a year on a restructure. You're probably going to kick the tires on that and see how he feels about it. I don't know if John would want that. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if that he would, because he views himself as a $20 million a year type guy. But is he still that? I don't know. Does this organization view him that way? And these are some of the hard decisions you got to make. So to me, I think that's why it becomes so easy to have the conversation about John and cutting him, is because the money is so favorable for the cut, like right now. Like you're saving so much money. Think about, what did you say, 16.5? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 16.4. Yeah.
That's three players if you want, right? That's three players, role players in an offense or a defense that can make you a better football team and that's tied up with him. So is he worth three players right now at this point in his career? And again, I'm not opposed to a restructure. I'm not. Like, he still does some stuff as a defensive player that is very, very good. But I don't think he's worth that $20 million number anymore. And again, like, the staff might feel differently, and I would defer to them on this. But that's something that, again, because of how the contracts are worked at the moment, I think you probably end up keeping Duron, right? Because, again, you have so much guarantee to tied up with it. And then John feels like a more natural one that's, and again, they might feel like we can restructure this and John wants to stay, John wants to retire commander, all those different things. But as of right now, just based on deal structure, I'm kind of like, it feels easier to move on from John.
And the way a restructure would work is John would get more money, but less per year. And that way it works for both sides. So let's say his base this year is 15.5. Let's say they say, hey man, we'll offer you 2 for $20. So you're going to definitely get $20 million guaranteed.
Right.
But it's over 2 years. Now your cap hit is $10 million, and that's a very oversimplified deal. That's like no signing bonus, whatever. But like that's the kind of way that it would work to do that. The other thing is, like, I don't know if there's not an easy way to say this, but like, I don't know how much John fits in what they want to do. Like, not just because John's been a leader in everything, but I think it just might. Here's the way I'll say it. I think it might be time for a fresh start for everybody in that relationship. I think that there was some stuff that happened in the acclimation process, whatever. I don't have it on good enough everything to like go too deep into it, but I definitely think that there were times last year where there was some push and pull with how they wanted to do things, and you know, John was an incumbent, and that's something that I think bubbled out into the press and whatever at times. There's other people that have talked about this a little bit more that might have a little bit more detail and reporting on it, but I think, you know, John's given a lot to this organization. He's from here. It's a great story, the whole deal. I just think it might be time to hit the eject button and start fresh. And it makes sense financially to do that. So the idea of extending him and bringing him more, especially like, hey, here's a guy who still views himself up here and we're going to ask him down here. And even if he accepts it, like, how happy is he going to be about that? I don't know that I want that kind of friction in my building either. So it might be best to just be like, hey man, thanks for everything. We might retire your number one day. I don't know if John actually got to that point, but like, you can tell him that on the way out, make him feel good. We'll welcome you back for alumni events. That's for sure. Yeah. And that's that. So, you know, Duron, I think, is one to watch, obviously, in a trade if the Myles Garrett thing comes about. But at the end of the day, I think Duron's going to be here for one more year. And then we're having the same discussion about Duron next year because he'll be entering the final year of his deal. And the math will math in a way that makes a lot of sense to move on from him. And then for John, I just think this is the end of the road for all of the reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, I as a former player, I have a really hard time talking about money for players because I'm always like, I always want players to make as much money as possible. And I don't want guys to get cut. This is a funny situation, though, right? Because it's like this is one of those things where it's like Father Time waits for no man. And speaking from experience, like as a player, you don't know that you're like done. You never know. Like, you always think you've still got more in the tank. You still think you're the best player, your best version of yourself. But you know that's not true. It's like you don't know it's true until you look back on it and reflect. So I think that's why these conversations, I mean, this probably sounds a little awkward between this dialogue right now. But it's I hate it, to be clear.
I want John to make
$20 million this year. I want him to make that. But is it the right situation here for him and for the team? I'm not sure. Same thing with Duron, man. Like, I think Duron is a good football player, and we can talk about value, absolute value of the contract, all those things. But ultimately, Like, the team paid him a contract. He's getting paid that money, and I'm happy for him. And I think that's where it's weird to have these conversations, because, like, I don't want to be messing with someone's livelihood, right? Like,
totally.
That's the thing that's weird.
And, like,
about
even
it.
Talking about, like, hey, well, trade Durant for Miles Garrett. No yeah, brainer. Right? It's like, that's a human being. Like, the way we commoditize players and treat them as commodities is, unfortunately, just a part of the job. Like, we have to do it because that's how the market works. And at least in the NFL, like, hey, sorry, Durant, you're going to have to go live in Cleveland. You're a Brown now, but you're making $20 million a year. Like, there's only so much you're going to cry for a guy who's making that much money. That's generational type money, as opposed to some other leagues that are lower down the scale, where, like, look, the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League, has banned trades without player consent, which I think is great, especially. That was part of their previous CBA, but, like, they don't make enough money to just be shipped across the country.
Right.
Like, that's insane at the salaries that they're making compared to what NFL guys or NBA guys are making. It's a lot easier to have those discussions when at least you know that they're not only are they going to be fine, but, like, their family is going to be fine for generations off of the money they made. But that said, like, they're still human beings, and we owe them that humanity to just not be like, yeah, just cut him. Yeah, whatever happens to him, I don't care. So it's not that. It's just, like, the reality of the business and talking about it in that way. But I think it's good for us to acknowledge that every so often, if not every time that we talk about it. Okay, that's our show for today. Next show, Mock Draft. We'll take a look at who might be on the board for the Commanders at 29. And we'll also take a look at what trades might be worth making leading up to 29. That'll come out on Thursday morning. And then next week, we'll talk to you from Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. For Logan, I'm Craig. We'll see you next time on Take Command.